And welcome to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout. Today is Thursday, December 11th. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll talk with Julie Walker from Aware. She'll be here with news about Girls on the Run. We'll talk with M.K. McNaughton about her global puppet project coming in January. We'll talk with Sabrina Chow, the World Affairs Council guest speaker here this week. And we'll get a preview of her talk about Hong Kong. Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up, Writers Almanac, and more here on a Juno Afternoon. But first, National Native News. Thanks for tuning in.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canada's National Assembly of First Nations has a new leader. Perry Bellegarde, chief of the Federation of Saskatchewan Indian Nations, was elected national chief Wednesday. But as Dan Karpinchuk reports, Bellegarde inherits the organization that's been fractured by infighting and questions about whether it can still represent the country's first people.
Perry Bellegarde won easily on the first ballot, taking 63% of the votes cast, and in his victory speech he came out swinging, mainly at the federal government of Prime Minister Stephen Harper.
Canada is Indian land. This is my truth, and this is the truth of our peoples.
It was what many of the nearly 500 delegates to the annual meeting of the Assembly of First Nations wanted to hear. Many of them were critical of the previous national chief, Sean Atleo, saying he was too cozy with the government and too ready to accept new legislation on Aboriginal education. Bellegarde said under his leadership, the AFN will be respectful, but will also be responsive and will be relevant. And he also had a warning for the Harper government.
Canada will no longer develop pipelines, no longer develop transmission lines or any infrastructure on our land as business as usual. That is not on.
But Bellegarde has a tough job ahead in reshaping the AFN. Last year's Idle No More movement was as much a protest against the government as it was a rejection of the assembly. One of the first challenges Bellegarde faces is the new Transparency Act, which he acknowledges is flawed legislation. Bellegarde defeated Ghislaine Picard, the AFN's interim leader, and Leon Jourdain, the chief of the Lac La Croix First Nation in Ontario. During his campaign, he pledged to restore pride among First Nations and to make self-determination one of his main priorities. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A meeting was held in Gallup, New Mexico this week to address alcohol abuse in the city. As KGLP's Rachel Cobb reports, Navajo and state leaders were among those talking about the issue in the border town.
Officials discussed the history of annual detention and treatment for thousands of Native Americans and others in a town alternately called the Indian Capital of the World and, as a result of negative press in the 1980s, Drunk Town, USA, culminating in a march on Santa Fe leading to funds for NCI, a detention and detoxification center that operated for two decades before losing funding in 2013. In January, the Navajo Nation entered into a memorandum of agreement with the City of Gallup and McKinley County to reopen the center, renamed the Gallup Detoxification Center, with the Navajo Department of Behavioral Health Services, DBHS, and the City of Gallup, together providing nearly $1 million in funding for 2014 operations. Despite this joint effort to fight alcoholism, the results have been mixed. Ramona Nez, Division Director for the Navajo Department of Health, said DBHS is addressing the revolving door effect of the center.
The Navajo Nation respectfully requested that the Gallup Police Department resume patrolling the ditches and arroyos and the alleys for individuals who are intoxicated and at the greatest risk to exposure.
Nez said that medical detox services will be contracted out soon, with a 12-hour hold increasing to as much as 72 hours for protective custody. Navajo Nation Council Delegate Edmund Nyazi was directly impacted by the issue.
I lost my sister to a drunk driver, and I know everyone here is impacted by alcohol.
With the new policy changes, the annual budget for protective custody, intervention treatment, medical detox, and aftercare treatment will range from $1 to $2 million. For National Native News, this is Rachel Cobb in Gallup, New Mexico.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the 5th Annual Native American Training Institute, April 12th. Information on services and the NATI event at ahcnm.org.
Broadcast Corporation is accepting artwork and reservations for the Alaska Native Art Auction, February 26th in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. Proceeds benefit Kiwanis News Programming. Learn more at knba.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And thank you for listening to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout, and every week I say to myself, wow, I sure do love this opportunity. And it's mainly because I get to talk to really cool people in our community. And I'd like to welcome to the studio M.K. McNaughton, speaking of cool people.
Thank you, Shona.
Yeah. So you are taking on this giant project, a big task, and it has to do with puppets. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the project that you're bringing to town.
Yes, of course. I met a woman years ago at a conference in D.C. We were both presenting on people who work in disability advocacy through the arts, and she has an incredible energy. Her name is Patty Mitchell, and we stayed in contact ever since that conference through Facebook, and she's been doing giant puppet projects for a while now with two guys that she works with, and they are very community rooted. She finds a sponsor, and then they set up a space and they let people come in and kind of work through the struggle of what am I going to make and how am I going to make it work. Her partner happens to have an engineering background, which comes in handy, and they make huge things. The giantness really appealed to me. And they do it cleverly. They don't make heads that weigh 9,000 pounds of paper mache. You know, they make soft supports that land on the shoulders and project a head up super high and use sticks to make arms go high and lots of fabric. So they have these billowy, dancey pieces. And the combination of the visual arts and the performing arts was very appealing to me.
That's right, because you yourself, you know, actually do both. And I think some people might know you more as a visual artist, but I'm happen to be very lucky that I know you also as a performing artist.
Thank you. Yeah, and I love junk, so this is a great junk recycling project.
What about the giantness inspired you? What connected there for you?
Well, I was thinking about that earlier today. One of my first jobs was dressing up in a costume called the Cinnamon Bear. It was holiday time, and it was an old radio show in Portland, long, long before our time, that was somehow holiday spirited. So they kept this going at Meyer and Frank Department Store, and they had people dress up in this giant Cinnamon Bear costume. And I had the last shift of the day. It was a really sweaty costume to put on. You get past that moment of grossness. And there was something magical about being in this bigger than life size costume, kids running at me and grabbing my legs, and I got to dance around and kind of act in ways that I wouldn't normally. So I have continued the fondness of dressing up and kind of hiding within a costume. So the giantness adds to that, I think, and it invites you to dance and move. And so we're going to make puppets and also perform in them.
So what will be the process, and how do local people get involved in it?
Well, I will advertise workshop times in early January. I figure I'll get past the holidays. No one will pay attention until after that. But in early January, I'll post information, and I'll make it really public. And it will be on my website, mkmcnaughton.com. And they're going to be here for I've hired the three artists for 3 weeks, and I'm volunteering my time to work with them. And they're actually coming for 4 weeks. I have a house sit available in a car, which is great. So we're going to be in the schools during the day. We have some residencies lined up, and then we'll be available. Merchants Wharf has given me the space at the end of the mall, the flight deck and the old knitting store.
Oh, great.
Big, long, empty space. And so I'll be set up there in the evenings and on the weekends, and people can just drop in, and people can come for one day, people can come for 3+ weeks. People can choose to be part of our performances or not. And someone said to me the other day, you know, I'd love to do it, but I work. And I thought, well, I should clarify that people can pop in for a little while, and you could help with another group project, or you could work completely independently. There are no rules.
So you don't have to be responsible for making one giant puppet on your own. You can really collaborate.
You can totally collaborate. And you can also, I just lost my train of thought.
What is the performance portion of it?
We have been invited to perform briefly at the Governor's Awards for the Arts, and we'll be doing a little outdoor escorting of the audience from one building to another. So I'm looking for some giant weatherproof puppets for that one that can act as an awning between the buildings. And then I volunteered us to perform for wearable arts. Well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say a lot of people want to be in wearable arts, but it's scary and a big job to get ready. So not going to be in the show, but we'll be the pre-show entertainment, just volunteering our time. And my vision is to have puppets as big as Centennial Hall outside. So when people drive up, the show's already beginning. You're greeted by these giant, giant puppets. And the theme is juxtapositions this year. So that's interesting with giantness. We'll see what people come up with. But we'll have some puppets inside as well as outside.
And how many do you think will be made?
You know, that's one of the fun things about this project is I really don't know.
Okay, yeah.
As many as want. I'm sure they won't all want to perform. And, you know, if we are too big for the space I have, I'll find a bigger space. I'll deal with that problem. Sometimes I think, what if three Girl Scout troops show up? You know, we'll... They'll take up the whole mall, but I'll just find another big space and we'll keep making puppets.
That's great.
Yeah.
And if people don't necessarily, like, I'm not the best puppet maker. I'm not the best,
I know.
But you know what I mean? I'm not the best visual artist. I'll throw that out there. But I would be really interested in performing with huge puppets. Mm. Is that something that people can get involved in as well?
Totally. Yes. Oh, really? Are you on?
I want to count on you. I know.
They're witnesses.
They're witnesses. Quite a few.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. It's a nice kind of community collaboration in that way, too. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice entry into kind of wetting your toes and trying to make something giant. And I have to say that when I taught in the schools, when I do teach in the schools, all little kids love art. We all like some mediums better than others, but they're willing to do it. And by fourth and fifth grade, people start saying what you just said, like, I'm not really a visual artist. So I don't know. I think as adults, we shouldn't say that. Bad role model.
It's a bad role. It's
yeah,
true.
Don't say that
it's
again, true. Please.
Okay. Yeah. Done. So funnily enough, this stuff doesn't happen for free. And we wish, you know, I would love that, you know, everything was affordable for everything. But you do have to raise money for this project to actually make it happen.
I do. Well, I am hoping to make the workshops free or pay as you like. So that's the plan.
Wow.
And I turned 50 in November, and I decided that I wanted to throw a big party and give a party to Juno. I'm thankful for being able to make it as an artist in this town. So this is my big art party, and I'm fronting this project. I am running a Kickstarter campaign, and I'm looking for donations from the community, and I'm also looking for donations from businesses. I have a really generous gift from the Skaggs Foundation, which will help really focus on working with students and people of all abilities. And I'm working with Nancy Lanehart. We're going to make an art kit for the schools that celebrates all abilities, and then have that available to share statewide. So there's generous funding there. Shattuck and Grumet is my first business sponsor.
Very
Yay.
Cool. Yeah.
So I am looking for donations, and those donations go to pay the teaching artists and buy some supplies. So it's pretty bare bones project. The space is free. I'm not taking anything from it. I'm hoping to break even or close to break even.
Yeah, so there's really no overhead costs. It's like you're really channeling money to the artists, which
yep.
is really
yep.
important for people to know.
Yeah, I believe in paying artists. So, and I have a free house sit, and we used miles to get them here, and a car that was donated. So everything's free except for the artist's time. And this is how they make their living, the three of them. That's amazing. So the Kickstarter campaign, people can find that on your website. They can find it on Kickstarter and on my Facebook page.
Okay.
And if you are on if you go to Kickstarter, it's fun to check out what's on there and look up the Giant Puppet Project or the Juno Giant Puppet Project. And it's only one. It will pop up. But you know something great? I got a donation the other day from a woman in Ireland who happens to make giant puppets and work with community and teach oil painting and drawing. We've been emailing. We had this great conversation. So she made a donation all the way from Ireland and said she would like to try to come. I said if she came, I'd find a place for her to stay and a teaching stipend.
Oh, yeah. Very cool.
I am also paying a filmmaker a little bit, and I'm hoping if I make enough, I can pay a local artist to help with the performance piece. So,
wow.
Yeah.
It's an ambitious project and
yes.
Super fun.
It
sounds like a really great time.
That is really the goal, to have fun with it.
Yeah. Is there a theme for the puppets as well, or is it kind of what everybody just wants to create?
It's really open. I like to have it just be, I'm working with some teens and I'm letting them know if they want to make a message, political message, they can. If somebody has on my Kickstarter campaign, I have gifts for people who donate, and one of the higher pledges is we'll make a, we'll make a puppet for your cause. So you tell us what the cause is, and then we'll design a puppet for you. No one's taken me up on that one yet.
That must be a higher number.
It's a higher one, yeah.
Yeah.
And the gifts are cumulative. So they start out small and they build, but if you buy a bigger one, you get all the ones below.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So also you talked about just before we came on air that next Wednesday you have something really cool going on too that I will totally check out.
Oh, good. The way Kickstarter works is you have to reach your goal, and mine is $8,500 and I'm just at $3,500. I have 10 days. So if I don't make it, I'm going to pitch in the rest because you don't get it unless you make your goal. So in order to do that, I'm going to sell stuff that's in my studio. I'm not going to sell it. If people want to come, have a glass of wine, eat some snacks, and take something off the wall and make a donation, then I'll put that towards Kickstarter. Because some people don't want to deal with the going online and signing up. Some people like that, some don't. But if you need last-minute gifts, I have some kind of traditional landscapes and lots of strange stuff in my studio. Lots of, you know, bowling pin lamp or napkin holders and paintings of bug wings and also some landscapes and more normal art.
Yeah,
see, some very sexy carrot drawings.
Ooh.
Come check those out.
What are those? Like carrots
kind
and lingerie?
Kind of intertwined carrots.
Oh, yeah. I remember
carrot
those.
Nuts. Yeah,
yeah.
I love them.
I do, too.
I have some hanging in my kitchen, but
it's a perfect platform.
You only need so many.
Well, I love that it's actually, I love that you said it's kind of your more, well, you didn't say weirder, did
it
you?
It is the weirder stuff.
Which is so cool.
It doesn't sell as well, but I don't know. Maybe I can find all those weirder people to come have a glass of wine and,
like me,
yeah, make a donation.
Perfect. And that will go right to the Kickstarter to bring the giant puppet project here.
Yeah.
So I know you also have a lot of other stuff going on because you have a studio and downtown called Sketch, and I know you do some classes and stuff like that. Are you going to have more classes and new classes starting for the spring? I think in semesters only for the spring semester.
Yes. Well, right after the Giant Puppet Project, I will have some classes in my studio, one kids and one adult class. And again, the Giant Puppet Project is every single day we'll have free open workshops. So people can just drop in, and I'm going to stop fundraising soon. I'm fundraising, and then I'm going to just stop and do it. And I am really excited about my new website. I just launched it yesterday, thanks to my dear friend Christy Name Erickson for updating it. My old website didn't work on iPhones or iPads. It wasn't mobile adaptive, which is terrible. So she fixed that for me and helped me spiff it up. And I launched my classes and you can buy my G. Clay prints of my paintings online now, and you can sign up for classes. I've had two people sign their kids up for classes just in the 24 hours, which is awesome. So if you go on mkmcnaughton.com, and it's mkmac, M-A-C.
Yeah,
Naughton.
Mac Naughton. That's great. So fabulous. People can check it out on Facebook, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
You can check out the Kickstarter campaign, Giant Puppet Project Juno.
Yeah.
And does the Giant puppet project? Are they a specific organization, like a group called something? Can people check out maybe their work online?
They are Honey for the Heart. And I think that really speaks to Patty Mitchell's spirit. She's one of those people that works with all abilities, all ages, and she literally kind of emanates a light. She's just fun and happy and kind of crazy. So Honey for the Heart. And there are some great videos of they do an annual Halloween parade in Athens, Ohio, that's pretty fabulous. There's a video on my Facebook page. I have millions of pictures of puppets from their past work and a link to a video. There's a link in the Kickstarter campaign, too. It's you have to cut and paste it because they wouldn't let me hyperlink it in there for some reason, but it's worth watching. It gives you the visual of what these really are, these, and how you move in them. That's what convinced me.
Yeah, and I think it's really important just to state again that it is for the whole community. It's not, you know, some for someone like me. It's that I can't be an artist. I don't do that. But I could actually go do that. And,
you
and you're inviting everybody to come try it out, maybe for the whole time or just for little portions of time.
Yeah, I mean, you could come paint feathers for a giant bird, you know, experiment with some painting texture. If you really like cutting out cardboard and shaping it into some geometric shape, you could make a bug head or something. You know, you could start something. And Patty and the guys and I will be there working with people. I'll be creating something too. I don't know what yet.
It's really exciting. What a great way to celebrate, I guess, your new bicentennial.
Yeah.
Is that what that is? That's 200 years.
Half a century. I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
50 years. I was inspired by Kristen Groh. She had a big party when she turned 40. That was a fundraiser for a theater.
It
was in theater, and I thought, that is a great idea. So,
yeah, and it was a lot of fun, too. A great way to give back to the community.
Yeah.
Yeah. MK McNaughton, thank you so much. Always a pleasure. Definitely check out her website online, and that's mkmacnaughton, M-A-C, .com. It's an updated website. You can get more information about the giant puppet project as well as donating to the Kickstarter. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed, right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squareitude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I do not strike you as a geek without the horn-rimmed glasses and knee-high argyle socks. But nerdery is more than wardrobe deep, and I'm a nerd down in my heart, and that's where nerdhood rocks. I'm better acquainted than a good girl ought to be with Aragorn and Yosef Bridge and Worf and Hal and Han. But you don't really know me, and my culture don't control me, so don't you pigeonhole me, cause my face is set to stun. I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say. My superpower's draining fun from parties. If I am a misfit, then I'm in good company with Auden, Austin, Hawking, Galileo, and Van Gogh, and countless other weirdos whom you really ought to know. So stow your expectations, no, I won't fix your PC, and I don't mind being underrated or ignored. The world is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh, I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I'd still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval in the end. In art for Dequan's dance groove swept the country,
And suddenly old moon boots were Italian haute couture. Time magazine reported that our time had finally come. I guess they didn't know that we already ran the world.
For the live recording of Alaska Originals featuring Marion Call. With music once described as acoustic joy jazz, Marion will play a two-part concert including original favorites and a special set of holiday music for people who are tired of holiday music. Marion will be accompanied by Laura Zahasky, and the show starts at 7 p.m. on Thursday, December 18th at 360. Tickets at ktoo.org.
And thank you for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon. Definitely check out that Marion Call show. We're so very lucky to have her here in Juneau. And, you get a chance to check her out next week. And that was the song, The Nerd Anthem, from her that we heard actually in full length. And thanks for tuning in to Juneau Afternoon. Today is Thursday, December 11th. My name is Shona Osterhout. And here is Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 11th of December, 2014. It's the birthday of Grace Paley, born New York City, 1922, grew up in the Bronx, surrounded by all sorts of immigrants. Her own parents spoke Yiddish and Russian at home, English only in public. She loved to hear all these different tongues. But when she started writing poetry, she wrote in a formal, stilted British style. She thought that's what poems were supposed to sound like. And then she met W.H. Auden, and he read her work. And Grace Paley recalled, "We went through a few poems, and he kept asking me, 'Do you really talk like that?' And I kept saying, 'Oh, well, sometimes.' That was the great thing I learned from Auden, that you'd better talk your own language." It's the birthday of the novelist Thomas McGuane, Wyandotte, Michigan, 1939, came from a family of Irish Catholics, emigrated to Massachusetts, where they saw themselves as outsiders. He said, "My parents moved to the Midwest. I can assure you that whatever we thought we were, we did not consider ourselves to be Midwesterners. When I moved to Montana in my 20s, I felt myself to be an outsider. The only thing that seems reassuring is that most Montanans feel the same way." McGuane went to the University of Michigan. One of his classmates was Jim Harrison. They became lifelong friends. First novel, The Sporting Club, 1969. He sold the film rights and bought a ranch with the profits. Spent the 70s in Hollywood writing screenplays, Rancho Deluxe, The Missouri Breaks. McGuane said, "Aspiring to be a screenwriter is like aspiring to be a co-pilot." Thomas McGuane, fly fisherman. He was Montana's cutting horse champion for 3 years in a row. And it's the birthday of the poet and novelist Jim Harrison, born in Grayling, Michigan, 1937. When he was 25, he was invited to go on a hunting trip with his father and sister. In the end, he didn't go, and they were both killed a few hours later, hit by a drunk driver. Wrote 3 books of poems first, then when he was in bed for months with an injured back, he tried writing a novel entitled Wolf, a False Memoir. A few years later came his novella, Legends of the Fall. Jim Harrison, who said, "Life is sentimental. Why should I be cold and hard about it? That's the main content. The biggest thing in people's lives is their loves and dreams and visions, you know. Here's a poem for today by Ron Kirchie, Bad News About My Vocation. I remember how the upper crust in my hometown pronounced it caramel, which is correct, I guess, but to everybody else it was caramel, which led to the misconception about the order of Carmelites. I imagined they served God by heating sugar to about 170 degrees centigrade, then adding milk and butter and vanilla essence while they listened to the radio. I thought I could do that. I could wear the white shirt and pants. I knew I couldn't be good, but I might be a good candy maker. So imagine my chagrin when I learned about the vows of poverty and toil enjoined by these particular friars. I also crossed off my list the Marshmallowites and the Apple Pieites, two other orders I was thinking of joining. Ron Kirchie's poem Bad News About My Vocation from The Ogre's Wife, published by Red Hen Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout, and today is Thursday, December 11th. And in the studio with me, I have Jim Clark of the World Affairs Council, and also the guest for the talk for the World Affairs Council, Ms. Sabrina Chow, the director of the Hong Kong Economic and Trade Office in San Francisco. Welcome to the studio.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Jim, I was wondering if you could tell people in Juneau, if they don't know, what the Juneau World Affairs Council is, what the mission is, the objective of the organization.
Well, the Juneau World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to bringing issues of international importance to Juneau. And as we say, we bring the world to Juneau. That's what we do. And tonight, we're just delighted to have Ms. Chow, who is the director of the San Francisco office of the Hong Kong International and Economic Trade Office. And she'll be speaking to us tonight at 5 o'clock here at the 360 North Studio. And again, we're coming to our meetings is free, and we'd urge folks to come and hear Ms. Chow and ask questions and that kind of thing.
Ms. Chow, thank you so much for joining us in Juneau. And so your talk tonight is Hong Kong, Where China and Global Advantages Converge. And I was just wondering if you could kind of give us a brief overview of what that means to you.
It's really a pleasure to be here in Juneau. This is my first visit to Alaska, so we've been really excited to be here. And the topic of the talk is really to introduce to the Alaskan community the role that Hong Kong has always played as a gateway for overseas investors and companies to go into China and the Asia region. And but at the same time, in more recent year, we're seeing a lot of Chinese investment going to Hong Kong and then using Hong Kong as a base to go out to the U.S. and Europe and other places. So Hong Kong is now more and more a two-way gateway for investment coming in and out of the region. And we would like to help, in particular, Alaskan businesses to understand how they could take advantage of this unique position that we are in to first of all, if they are exporter, we would like to help them to explore the market in Asia and China. If they are planning to go international and set up their presence in Asia, we would like to help them to assess the value of placing themselves in Hong Kong as the base for their regional operation.
Why is Hong Kong appealing for business owners? What is the idea behind that?
Yes. Of course, tonight at the talk, I will talk more about it in more detail. But to sum it up, Hong Kong is really a place where American investors will find a very familiar, comfortable environment, because Hong Kong, being part of China, we are a special administrative region, and we are governed under a one country, two systems principle, meaning that Hong Kong continue to run a system that we have been running since our colonial days as a British colony. We are a free market, we are a free port, we are a capitalist system. We are still running on a common law legal environment, and our regulatory regime is really transparent and easy to comply with. So American companies coming to Hong Kong will find it very easy to navigate our system. But at the same time, because Hong Kong has been doing business with China and the rest of Asia for many, many years, ever since China opened up its economy back in the late 1970s and early 80s, Hong Kong investors have been going into China and investing in various industries. And so our entrepreneurs are very familiar with the Chinese market and have long years of experience doing business there. In addition to that, the service providers that have been supporting these entrepreneurs, like our lawyers, our accountants, our bankers, our logistics provider, they all know the Chinese market and the rest of Asia, because Hong Kong people, they're very entrepreneurial. They don't only go into China to do business. They have been doing business across the region. So that is our main advantage of being a place where really the East meets West. For American companies, particularly those who are smaller or medium-sized companies that are looking to go into Asia, but not knowing the market or the environment there and feeling sort of intimidated, Hong Kong is a really good place to start, because going to Hong Kong, you get to meet people who already know the region and the market, and they could help you find your way around.
It seems like you say smaller businesses, which is really interesting, because we, you know, when I think of businesses that operate, you know, American businesses that operate in China, I'm thinking Nike, and I'm thinking really huge industries, you know, and but you're saying that it's not just for huge companies.
No, actually, for our office, we actually give a lot of help to smaller businesses, because, like you say, the big company, the like of McDonald's, the like of Starbucks, they all have a big team of in-house lawyers. They have their own, you know, marketing and sales team. They would be able to find their way around on their own, sort of, and they would be able to get in touch with business partners, because they are the big brand names. But we work a lot more with the smaller businesses, because those are the businesses that would need more support as they try to establish themselves in a new market. And in Hong Kong, we are very used to the small business environment, because Hong Kong itself, the smaller and medium-sized enterprises actually make up 90% of our companies in Hong Kong. So they are the major force of business vitality in Hong Kong. The government has been working with these companies for many, many years, knowing what kind of support they would need to thrive in Hong Kong. So we would love to help other companies do the same.
And you're the director of the Hong Kong Economic and Trade Office in San Francisco, and I just asked before you came on air, that is actually a government set-up office. And I was wondering if you could talk, is that the main objective of your office, and just other things that you might do, because I had no idea it existed, really.
Yes, the Hong Kong Economic and Trade Office is actually office set up by the Hong Kong government in the United States. So we are one of three offices set up by the government back in the 1980s. So we've been around for almost 30 years. Besides our office in San Francisco, which look after 19 states in the western half of the country, we have another office in New York City that looks after the rest of the United States, 31 states. And then we have one more office in Washington, D.C., that works more with the federal government and the Congress. For our office in San Francisco, we do one of the major roles that we have is to promote trade and investment between Hong Kong and the United States. So we would go around to talk to government entities, talk with Chamber of Commerce, and introduce to them the latest development that is going on in Hong Kong and what are the new opportunities that businesses here can capture. But we also go around to talk to universities because we are a government office. So even though our major objective is to get trade and investment grow, we would also like to facilitate things like cultural and education exchanges. So like on this trip to Alaska, we were at UAA yesterday, and we talked to the faculty there about the fact that perhaps we can facilitate beginning of some exchange program for students so that Hong Kong students would have the opportunity to come to Alaska, and Alaskan students could likewise go to Asia, go to Hong Kong to spend some time there and learn about different culture and different environment.
I think if listeners are keeping up with world affairs, especially what's happening in Hong Kong right now, I imagine that there will be some questions this evening because it's pretty hard to talk about right now what's actually happening. Would you feel comfortable addressing those kinds of things tonight, or how much room will you leave for that kind of thing?
Yes, certainly. We would love to address any questions people may have about Hong Kong. If you have been reading the news or watching TV reports, Hong Kong has been on the news quite frequently over the past 2 months. And we have just have a clearance operation in Hong Kong that finally clear most of our roads, major thoroughfare, to reopen them for public use. And that part of the development in Hong Kong is really, really highlight the fact that we are a special administrative region. We have autonomy in a lot of matters, including the development of our political system. The protests that have been going on in Hong Kong mainly has to do with a further reform of our political system, particularly the way that we will be electing our next head of government. We call the head of government the chief executive. So currently, under the basic law, our mini constitution, the chief executive is elected by an election committee that has 1,200 members. And we are looking to expand that election system to give all eligible voters in Hong Kong, that's about 5 million of us, the right to vote and elect the next chief executive in 2017. And the major subject of debate has been, how are we going to do that? How are we going to come up with the candidates to run for the election and things like that? So those issues have been hotly debated in Hong Kong, and we're still trying to resolve the differences. But we will be working on that from the government side together with the community. We hope to be able to find a way to have a consensus on the way forward in that development.
Mrs. Chow, just one more question for you. Where do you see Alaskan businesses or products actually being able to take advantage of what you're talking about, this this economic, essentially trade, its advantages for both sides? Do you see any kind of specific products or any specific thing that makes you go, well, that's a no-brainer?
Currently, Hong Kong has been buying, like most other Asian countries, I believe, Asian economies have been buying a lot of seafood from Alaska. And because Hong Kong itself has been a major market for U.S. agricultural products, we are the sixth largest in the world for U.S. agricultural products. And if we look at the higher value, the high value consumer-ready products, we are actually the fourth largest in the world for the U.S. So we feel that for seafood, this sort of high-end food products, agricultural products, there is a great potential in Hong Kong, and we feel there will be a lot of room for growth. But in addition to that, we also buy a lot of precious metal from the United States. We have been buying, and we haven't been buying a lot from Alaska directly, because you export the mineral ores like the gold and the silver, but they are not the end product that we usually buy, because in Hong Kong we have a very established jewelry industry in Hong Kong. And in fact, Hong Kong, one of the major category of exports from Hong Kong back to the U.S. are jewelries. So we've been buying a lot of precious metal, precious stones from U.S. and other countries to make those products and re-export them and export them back to the developed world. But in those areas, we feel there are also potential for bigger growth. Another area is logistics, in cooperation in the logistics side, because Cathay Pacific, our flagship Hong Kong airline, has been using Anchorage as its major hub for air cargo operation in North America. So, and Hong Kong itself is currently the world's busiest air cargo hub. We handled over 4 million tons of air cargo last year.
Wow.
And so there would be a lot of opportunities for further cooperation between Hong Kong and Anchorage, because Anchorage itself is a major air cargo center as well in the world. So we see there are many different ways that we could possibly work closer together and explore new opportunities.
Sabrina Chow, the speaker tonight for the World Affairs Council on Hong Kong, where China and global advantages converge. It's been a real pleasure talking with you today. And I was wondering, Jim Clark, if you could give those details one more time.
Well, one more time. It's going to be at 5 o'clock at the 360 North studio, the K2 studio. And we remind people it's for free and invite them to come, because it sounds like it's going to be a very interesting talk tonight. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout. Today is Thursday, December 11th. In the studio with me, I have Julie Walker with Girls on the Run. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Girls on the Run, for people who don't know, can you just give us a quick fill-in about what it is?
Absolutely. So Girls on the Run is a program for third through eighth grade girls. It's 12 weeks, 24 lessons. It's implemented by volunteer coaches at the elementary and middle schools. The curriculum covers things like body image, resisting peer pressure, making healthy decisions, and also they are training for a 5K while they do this. So there's some running, some social-emotional skills that they're building. It's just a really great program.
So the 5K is actually coming up.
Yes. So we are ending our season, and the kind of the culminating event is this 5K. It's a celebratory event. It's not a non-timed 5K event. It'll be at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse on Saturday the 13th at 10 a.m. We'll have festivities like face painting and hair decorating, and a fun theme, which is Winter Wonderland this time.
Sounds great. What a great opportunity for it. So the community is invited to come out and cheer these girls on.
That's right. We invite community members to come out, cheer them on, come volunteer if you want. You're welcome to run 27 laps on the track with them, but I encourage you instead to just come and cheer for them, because that'll probably be more fun.
And what else is coming up for Girls on the Run?
So we're looking forward to our spring season already, which will start in February. And so we are going to be training all new coaches on January 10th from 9 to 5 at Aware. And you don't need to be a runner by any means to be a coach. Just have an interest in supporting girls in a healthy lifestyle. You can be a runner or a walker. It doesn't matter. Just have a kind of an open heart to the Girls on the Run philosophies.
And how do people get involved? Where do they contact?
If they could contact AWARE, this is a program of AWARE, one of our prevention programs. So you can find us online at awareak.org, or you can always call us at 586-6623 and just ask for me. My name is Julie. I coordinate the program, and I would love to invite you to the coaches training on January 10th.
So January 10th, the coaches training, you can get involved in the schools with Girls on the Run, leading healthy, happy lifestyles, as well as this Saturday. You could kind of even probably check it out and talk to somebody there, I imagine.
Absolutely. We'll have an information booth there as well.
Yeah, so that's this Saturday. Could you give us a time one more time?
Yes. Diamond Park Fieldhouse this Saturday, 10 a.m. is festivities, 11 o'clock the running begins.
That's Julie Walker with Girls on the Run, a great program from AWARE. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jenna.
And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Osterhout. Today is Thursday, December 11th. And in the studio with me, the one, the only, Nancy DeJourney with Arts Up.
Hey, we have some things to do.
Yeah, don't we always?
Yeah, well, you've talked about the things that are happening tonight. And let's see, tomorrow at 7:15, the Juno Student Symphony Winter Concert happens out at Harborview Elementary. There's also at 5, League of Women Voters has a holiday meet and greet at V's Cellar Door, which is on Seward Street. Let's see, Dan Hobson is, of course, at the Gold Room Baranoff. On Saturday, there's a beginning jewelry workshop with Rowan Law at the Canvas. Ooh.
I did make that face.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Is it not full yet?
Well, I don't know. I didn't ask him that. Mm. But you could certainly call and see if you could squeeze in. Also at 9 o'clock in the morning, Orca Ski and Snowboard Volunteer Training up at the Eagle Crest Ski Area. Girls on the Run, which you just mentioned, and there's a coffee and collections. I have it being at 3:30, and I don't usually remember that being at 3:30, so I could be wrong.
I don't believe it.
Yeah, well, sometimes it happens. it's good to be aware of that. But anyway, the museum has its coffee and collections this Saturday. The Holiday Barn Dance up at St. Anne's Parish Hall, it's at 7:30 on Saturday. And there's the first of the two Holiday Pops at 7:30 out at Chapel by the Lake. I would note that in the Empire it has it at the Jack, but the Saturday one is in the Valley at Chapel by the Lake. And then on Sunday at 3 o'clock, it's at the Jack. So just be aware of that.
And, you know, that's always a wonderful Sally Smith was talking about it to me a couple weeks ago, and she's like, I've got 70 singers.
I know. It's amazing. Everybody loves to sing, don't they?
Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's fun. Yeah. And anyway, that's a great holiday event to go to. Let's see. We've got the Juno Holiday Skating Recital at the Treadwell Ice Arena at 2:30 on Sunday. Harlem Ambassadors Basketball Game. Now, I didn't get the details on that, but here it is on my list.
Cool.
It's at 3 p.m. at Thunder Mountain High School. At 3 p.m. also is the Holiday Pops at the Jack and How to Draw Plants with Constance Baltuck at the City Museum. So you could just do all kinds of things at 3 o'clock on Sunday. You can't do them all, however, so you'll have to make some choices, tough ones. On Monday, let's see, it's the Holiday Book Club, A Christmas Doll. They're reading that over. That was just performed here, and now they're reading the book over at the Douglas Public Library. So go and enjoy that conversation. At 6 p.m. at the Downtown Public Library is the Tlingit Language Learners Group, and this is led by some of Lance Twitchell's students, and no background is necessary. You can just come and start learning a little bit or find out more about the Tlingit language. So that's at 6 p.m. at the Public Library.
And that was Monday?
Mm-hmm.
And is that their first meeting?
It's the first one that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm.
but I think they're planning to make it a regular event. So
that's so amazing, and
yeah,
I think it's
such
a great opportunity for everybody in Juneau.
Yeah, so go down and check that out. It's free, of course. And let's see, we have a roundtable, Arts Roundtable, on the 16th at the Jack. At 7:30 at Northern Lights United Church, Kyle Farley Robinson is having a piano recital. He's a phenomenal young pianist here in town. So go and help him out, support him in that. Let's see, on Wednesday at 7 p.m., holiday music for people who are tired of holiday music.
So after you get your pops fill, then
you've had enough.
Yeah, then you can go see Marion Call.
This is at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. And then it looks like that's happening again at 7 p.m. on Thursday at 360. So, yeah, it's Marion Call is a wonderful resource here in town, and you should check her out for sure. I think that's it for the week, actually. Is that amazing?
That is unbelievable.
I think there's some downtown holiday activities that I forgot to put down on this list. If you want to check the list out, and we do update it on a regular basis, you can go to either jahc.org or ktoo.org. And also, if you want to put your stuff on it, give us a call or send us an email to info@jahc.org. So.
And I wanted to ask about the Arts Council's next event, because I think it's something that is now in its third, maybe fourth year, coming up right after the holidays. No, there's a big gospel.
Oh, that's choir, coming. Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah,
it's
the gospel
right around the corner.
Oh, yes, it is right around the corner. actually, we have a bunch of things coming right around the corner. Actually, next Saturday, not the one that's coming right up, but the 20th, we're having a thing called Naughty and Nice. It's a beer and wine tasting that's sponsored by Specialty Imports. They're going to bring a lot of naughty and nice beers and wines, like Naughty Nelly and Yves Chardonnay and stuff like that. And there'll be a whole bunch of other things. Alaska Dames will be there, and a few other vendors will be there, and Pucker Wilson will be open, and we'll have some games and fun things to do. So that's a little fundraiser for the Jack. The next thing that we have coming is in January. It's called Intergalactic Nemesis. And I believe
that's in January?
Yes, that is.
When? I really want to go. Now I have to put it in my calendar.
Yes, it's towards the end, and I've had one of those brain moments right now where I can't remember. But the wonderful people here at KTOO and Coast Alaska are going to be broadcasting some of their shows. I know one of them is going to be on New Year's, so Intergalactic Nemesis is going to be exciting and fun, and so, yes, by all means, get that. It's in January, and then right after that, we have, of course, Wearable Art, and we're down to, like, 225 tickets for Saturday. So if you have not yet gotten your tickets for Saturday, one should do so. And then, but we do have a lot for Sunday, and Sunday is a great show. We're not doing the Mayor's Awards this year, so it'll... What I like about the Sunday show is I feel like the artists feel more confident. They know what they're doing, and this is their last hurrah, so they're really doing it for the show. So I think it's certainly a good option to be. If you haven't got your Saturday tickets yet, do come to the Sunday show. Let's see. And then after that, exactly the day after Wearable Art, is the Gospel Guys come to town. Eustace Johnson is the piano player, and Bobby Lewis. They start on Monday with the gospel choir workshops, and they'll go all through the week, and then on Friday they're doing a Motown thing as a fundraiser for the Willoughby Arts Complex, actually, and then they do the celebration on Sunday. It's phenomenal. It's an amazing, uplifting, wonderful, good time thing to do.
So cool.
Sign up.
And where can people get information about all the upcoming Jack events?
Just go right to jahc.org, and they're right there on the under the events button. Go there.
Great.
We'll see ya.
Thanks, Nancy.
Support for a Juneau Afternoon comes from BEP Company, providing remanufacturing and recycling services for toner and inkjet print cartridges, serving Juneau for 25 years. More information at bepcompany.com or 789-2230.
Support comes from GCI Wireless, with coverage in 200 communities throughout Alaska. More details on available plans and devices at gci.com.
And thanks for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ok Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable, Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at ktoo.org.
Understand, all these provisions in this bill have been worked out in a bipartisan, bicameral fashion.